For some years, people have had ideas about having a computer attached to a global positioning system receiver to give blind people information through a speech synthesizer about where they are and where they should be headed. The trouble is, who wants to go around with a large computer in a backpack on your back with lots of wires hanging out of it? Well, maybe you don't need to do that anymore. Computers are getting smaller and alliances are being formed. On the line now is President and CEO of Sendero Group, Michael May. Very pleased to have you on the program, Mike. Firstly, before we get into the nitty-gritty of this, where does the name Sendero come from?
Well, I found when we were looking for a name for this company that had an international aspect to it and had something to do with wayfinding, pathfinding, getting around, all of the names were taken. Sendero means pathway in Spanish, and it seems to work in multiple languages just fine. So it's a name that we settled on and seems to work quite well.
Now, there'll be a number of people who are familiar already with the kind of work that you're doing, but for those who are not, take us back to the beginning and talk to us about Atlas Speaks, GPS Talk, all the wonderful stuff that you're involved with right now.
There are a couple of products which were originally developed by Ark and Stone in California and Visuaid of Montreal, Canada, and this was a digital talking map which takes an electronic database of an entire country, every address and point of interest almost in the entire country is cataloged with its latitude and longitude. This huge database is then available as a map, and if you add speech to it and a user interface that's appropriate and accessible, then you have a talking map. And this is what Ark and Stone released about 4 or 5 years ago in the form of a product called Atlas Speaks. And this digital database with the talking map then would be used for a blind, visually impaired person to be able to explore their way around an area in infinite detail before they went out the door, so they could have a good idea of, well, let's say, how to find their way from a bus stop to the final destination, the number of streets in between, the length of blocks, all sorts of details that you couldn't get through other kinds of map formats, like tactile maps or by having a sighted person describe it to you.
I suppose that Atlas Speaks has been around long enough now for us to start to make assessments about whether this technology is really making a difference. Is it improving people's orientation? Are they getting greater independence from it?
Well, there's a couple of issues in terms of the success of this kind of product. One is, how good is the technology? How good is the functionality for the users? And then also, what is the learning curve and the understanding of this kind of technology by blind and visually impaired users? In terms of the technology, things are in pretty good shape. The good news is that we're dealing with technology that's being developed for the general market. We're trying to limit the amount of special development that's done for blind users. We want to parallel as much as possible the developments in the commercial market, because then, of course, our technology is newer and more current and also, most importantly, less expensive. So the technology is in pretty good shape. You have all kinds of map databases that are accessible on the Internet. They may not be very usable by visually impaired users, but they're out there for the general public, and therefore these databases are being built up and enhanced daily. So in most countries, you've got databases that are coming along quite nicely, and there's a lot of room for improvement. As soon as the map is published, of course, it's outdated, but of course with the Internet, you don't have that issue to deal with as much as you do with, of course, printed map or maps on a TV. So in terms of the map technology, things are good and are getting better. In terms of blind people becoming familiar with this kind of detailed map information, I think we're further down on the learning curve because we haven't had access to this kind of detail in our lives previously. A lot of us are real rookies at using map technology, and I find that some people are map users, map friendly, other people have a hard time with it. They may just want to know how to get from point A to point B and not all the gory details in between. Other people do like to know all the street names and what nearby points of interest are and so forth. I think as this kind of technology becomes more widely available and becomes used by children and young adults as they grow up and becomes part of the tools that they use for getting around, I think we'll see a lot more general success and acceptance in the blindness and visually impaired field.
What would I do if I was going, for example, to the ACB convention in Louisville, which I will be doing later this summer, and I've never been to Louisville before? What would I do with that bespeaks to kind of improve my stay there, to be able to get to restaurants around the hotel, that sort of thing?
Jonathan, what you would do is you type in the address of the hotel or the street intersection of that hotel. Then you would be at that virtual location on the Atlas map. At that point, then, you have a couple of different options. You can explore around using the arrow keys, and essentially you drive with those arrow keys. You press the up arrow key to go forward and the left and right arrows to turn. And if you want to turn and go down a street, then you, let's say you hit the right arrow and then you're facing in the direction you want to go, you hit the up arrow and you hop forward one intersection at a time. In this way, you can find out the names of the streets that are around the hotel, thereby understanding much better when you talk to the concierge and you say, I want to go find a Mexican restaurant, and they give you a name and they tell you roughly how to get there. Even though you have not set foot outside of the hotel yet, you have in your mind's eye a picture of the route to get to that restaurant because you've already familiarized yourself with Atlas of the local nearby streets. That's one way you can use it. Another would be to put in the address of the restaurant as your destination, then ask Atlas to calculate a route from your current location to the destination. And in that case, you're not figuring out the route the computer is, and it tells you specifically, go so many blocks forward, turn right, and so on.
Will there ever come a time when this stuff is so smart that as best as you can with a constantly changing thing like a map and restaurant names, etc., that you could actually type in the, you know, say I want to go to my nearest Pizza Hut and it will tell you where the nearest Pizza Hut is according to its records and give you a direction for that?
The answer is we're almost there. There is a company that puts out a database for the United States of 15 million points of interest. And so in particular, places like Pizza Hut and McDonald's and all of those establishments are in this database. So the answer is databases are available. Whether they're linked in or not is a function of licensing agreements, and that's something that's a big part of our function, is to get affordable maps and affordable points of interest databases linked in so that one can bypass the concierge and just look things up based on your own interests and categories. And we'll be adding points of interest lists to the product as we develop these relationships and licenses.
And at the moment, this map information, the Atlas Speaks product, is available for U.S. customers only, is that correct?
The current version are just for U.S., the U.S. and Puerto Rico and Guam. We have negotiations underway for Canada and UK. We already have license agreements for 12 countries in Europe, and then we expect to be moving on to New Zealand and Australia in the near future. We have contacts with the companies in those areas. The challenge always is that the license agreements are typically for huge quantities of product, and therefore the licenses are the neighborhood of $250,000, $500,000, $1 million, and the blindness market will not sustain that. So my approach has typically been to go to these suppliers and say, look, either make your product accessible, which is my choice number one, or if you can't make it accessible yourself, make it accessible indirectly by providing it at an affordable price for our customers, for our small niche market, and we'll plug your data into our interface and make it accessible. And so far, most of the companies, once you work through the red tape, are willing to go along with that solution.
So the response from those companies has generally been quite favorable.
The response has been favorable from those companies, and as we get more countries on board, the pressure is on the subsequent companies to not be left out looking like they're stingy and uncooperative.
Well, the idea of having this tool that will give you tireless and accurate directions is wonderful in itself. But then, of course, you combine this with GPS technology, and we're talking something really, really significant here. Can you just tell us, for those who aren't familiar with it, what GPS is?
GPS stands for Global Positioning System, and this is a network of 24 satellites that circle the world, and they're available virtually any place in the world. As long as you're outdoors, those satellite signals are beaming down, and a GPS receiver picks up those signals, and then using either a map database or just a latitude-longitude system can determine where one is. And if you're blocking those signals with tall buildings or under thick foliage, then the signals aren't available, but by and large, they're almost anywhere in the world. Now, the caveat to that is that the U.S. military puts in a distortion factor to limit the accuracy of the GPS signals to approximately 100 meters. This is supposed to be turned off in about 2 or 3 years. It's called selective availability. Until then, you have about 100 meter accuracy. Sometimes it's better, sometimes it's worse. Through the ingenuity of various companies to get around this, there are more accurate systems which work in conjunction with the GPS that can get accuracy down to, say, 1 to 5 meter level for general consumer use, or for commercial use, they actually have systems that get you down to centimeter accuracy.
So by combining the Atlas Speaks concept with the talking maps with a GPS receiver, we start getting very useful information about our environment, where we are. We can almost be talked through, I guess, going from point A to point B.
There really are two wonderful aspects to this kind of combination, as you describe it, the GPS and the talking map. One is for navigation, getting from point A to point B, and that's very helpful. The other is the information access capability. And although we started out this project at Arkenstone as a navigation product, I've actually found through using the prototype over the last 3 or 4 years that my greatest enjoyment and appreciation of this technology is as an information access tool. I'm in a car, I'm in a captive audience of whoever happens to be driving, whether it's my wife or a taxi driver, whomever. And I might be aware, if I'm lucky, of, let's say, 1% of the information that the sighted person is seeing as they drive along. I would like to have a lot more independence than that, particularly when it comes to the taxi driver, because they may or may not speak the same language as me, or they may or may not be interested in telling me what's around. With this GPS and the various linked databases, one can hear as much or as little information about what you're passing through, what's nearby, as you want here. So when I'm driving down the highway, rather than being dependent on the driver for information, I can hear everything about the restaurants, the cities I'm passing through, the speed that we're traveling, and I can set my distance of information that I want to be hearing about manually. There's lots of options in terms of how much or how little information I want to hear. I put in an earphone, and when we're driving along, I can get a play-by-play of all of these points of interest. And that's extremely empowering in terms of navigation, but more just in terms of interest level in knowing what's out there.
And with regard to the automobile application, we're not talking science fiction here. We're talking about right here and now. That product is on the market today, right?
That's correct. We released the first version of GPS Talk, or which we call GPS Auto Talk. With this idea in mind, the concept originally was, well, let's have a unit that you can walk around with, and it does everything for everybody everywhere. And in the meantime, I'm enjoying driving out the road and hearing all this great information, and it dawned on us, let's make that product available first and foremost so other blind people can enjoy those benefits as well. So the GPS AutoTalk was released at VSUN and is now shipping. It's not necessarily limited to use in a car, but the accuracy that we talk about, the 100-meter accuracy with GPS only, is what we're currently offering. And one cannot find your way by foot, let's say, directly into a doorway with that level of accuracy. I think for the pedestrian unit, we would want to have differential correction to provide the 5-meter accuracy before we release that particular product. And there will be upgrades to the current AutoTalk version that will allow that better accuracy capability and some of the other things that are necessary for having a good walk-around unit.
Now, that must, I imagine, come in different permutations, the GPS AutoTalk, because some people will have a laptop already that's best suited to it, and they will therefore just need the software and the receiver, whereas others will be starting from the beginning and they'd need a computer. So do you cater for all those different combinations?
Well, I should mention that the approach that we're taking here is to not provide a standalone unit for people. Eventually, that will happen. Eventually, we'll get to the cell phone style unit that has GPS, and you press 511 and ask them where's the nearest McDonald's. What we're offering is an application that you add to your mobile computer, to your laptop. So we are talking a laptop as opposed to a desktop. But as far as which laptop, it's up to you to have one that suits your needs for your other applications. We assume that you will have a laptop that's running a screen reader and word processing, email, and the other things that you'll need when you're out and about or going to and from your job. You would add the GPS Talk software and a GPS receiver to your laptop to be just one of those several applications that's running on the laptop. However small a computer you can afford is really the primary thing that dictates the size and portability of this unit. There's everything from a small Sony or Fujitsu or some of the other brands that are less than an inch thick and in a 2 to 3 pound category up to the devices that are the laptops that are more in the range of, let's say, 7 pounds, but they include the floppy, the CD, everything's built in and wrapped up all into one box. And some people like the smaller unit because of the weight, other people like the larger unit because the pieces are all combined.
What sort of processor power and memory and things are required to make this go?
Apps and GPS Talk don't require any heavy-duty processing speed. The software synthesizer that you would typically want to run to make your system as portable as possible will probably need more processing speed or need more functional, certainly, if you have a higher speed computer. The Atlas software itself doesn't care so much whether it's more than 100 megahertz. Your software speech will very often like to see 200, 300, 400 megahertz. Most computers that are coming out this day are that speed or faster. In terms of hard drive space, the entire U.S. is over 2 gigabytes if you wanted to load all the maps at once. Most people don't tie up that much disk space by loading the whole country. You can always put on additional CDs or copy from the CD MIDI here when you go to a new area. So the main thing is to have a decent-sized hard drive, and I would say 200 megahertz or more on your computer.
And how much is it selling for?
The GPS Talk product comes in one flavor, which is I have CDs. This is for the U.S. now. We expect other country versions will be similarly priced. But the 5 CDs, tapes, manuals, GPS receiver, all in a typical software bookshelf box, and that's $7.99. The Atlas Speed U.S. version without the GPS is $3.99. And then there's a third option, which is a quarter of the U.S. Atlas for $1.99.
Now, what we're all looking forward to is, of course, the day when we can all have a very tiny machine that we can walk around with that's giving us all sorts of useful information from the GPS system and the whole Atlas Speaks concept. And what really prompted me to have a chat to you this particular week is the media release that came out at the beginning of the week announcing an alliance between your company and a company that is in the business of making these what they call wearable computers. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, this is very exciting. The smallest computer I've had the pleasure of using is a Xybernaut. That's Xybernaut .com if you want to look at their website. And the Xybernaut is the size of a small, let's say, Walkman tape recorder with a couple of belt loops on the back, so you can actually just run it onto your belt. And it also has various straps that allow you to wear it in different configurations. But it's about a 2-pound or less full computer. There's no screen, no keyboard. So you're just looking at this Walkman shape box. It's got a couple PCMCIA slots and then all the connectors where you can hook in your standard devices, a screen, a keyboard, a USB port, and so forth. Now, of course, you need to operate this in some fashion. So how you interface with it is a part of the equation right now. When you're walking around, it's certainly quite feasible to use a 17 keypad. You could use voice input, although I don't find it particularly reliable, particularly in an outdoor environment. There are other small keyboards that one can use. Xybernaut has one that was developed for military use, which is 3 by 6 inches and is a very durable metal keyboard that's quite nice and also quite expensive. Then you have other options that most blind people don't particularly care about, but that kind of look Star Wars-ish. Headsets are called HMDs, head-mounted devices, which are earphones and video displays that flip down over your eyes so you can see a full-screen display. The Xybernaut that I have is 233 megahertz with a 4.1 gig hard drive, 128 megabytes of RAM. And I've opened the thing up, and the hard drive is surrounded in a gelatin, so it's particularly well dampened when you're out bouncing around. It doesn't affect it whatsoever. Because it's really designed originally for use in commercial environments, it has been made extremely rugged. And that's one of its major benefits over some of these other computers I mentioned, like the Sony and the Fujitsu and some of the relatively small computers, which aren't really meant to withstand the kind of abuse you would in a rugged outdoor environment.
What's the nature of the relationship that you've entered into with Xybernaut in terms of are they providing you with research and expertise? How will it work?
The relationship between Sendero and Xybernaut has been mutually supportive, primarily coming from them to us. These are fairly expensive computers. They list for $4,500. And so they have supplied us with equipment, a couple of units for research and development. And there's been a lot of issues, relatively small issues, but important ones for users, our users that are relying on other means of output than the screen display, which is how the Xybernauts are really oriented. And so we've had to work out issues with different connectors and the text-to-speech, sound cards, and so forth. And they've been extremely supportive. I've sat down in their research lab. They don't allow very few people into, and I've sat down there with their engineers and worked out some of these issues. So they've been very supportive with equipment and also with customizing different pieces of the equation to make this more functional.
So do these things come with sound cards out of the box, or is that something that has to be added?
No, the MA4, which is their current model, and they'll have an MA5 at time later, I don't know when. There's a Xybernaut conference in May, and they may announce when that MA5 would be coming out. but they have a sound chip built in, which is quite good and quite responsive. There is no earphone jack on the MA4. So one of the issues was simply to add to one of their other connectors an earphone output so that we could use either an earphone or a speaker without having to have the whole rig or the head-mounted device.
Well, yes, because I can't help observing that with a computer that size, with an earphone jack, it would make the ultimate MP3 player, wouldn't it?
It sure would.
So, with this alliance and the work that you both are doing on this now, how soon will it be? You must be immensely tired of this question. How soon will it be before we have a tiny thing that we can take with us that will be providing us with navigational information?
Well, over time, you will have the different pieces of the puzzle getting integrated into one box. Right now, we have the Zybernaut MA4, which takes care of all the computing needs, but you still have some other external devices, like the GPS. There's a separate unit. I would love it if the MA5 had GPS built in. Then that's one more thing to integrate into the same box. When you integrate these things into the same box, then you have one power source. You only have to charge one device. It just makes things simpler. Right now, the GPS is external, and that works great. It interfaces fine. And we have a fairly small unit, but it can get smaller yet. Same thing with the input devices. You have an external keypad. When that can become reliable voice command and control, then we can dispense with the external keypad. Once we get down to that Zybernaut itself, and that's the only thing there, let's say the Zybernaut and its battery that's on your belt, then you really have a very powerful computer that's in a, let's say, 2 pound or less version. The next stage, Jonathan, really moves beyond running Windows 98 or 2000 or ME, whatever it happens to be, into a smaller platform yet that's either running Palm OS or CE or one of these things, or even better, a system that doesn't really require a whole lot of computing on your device. Everything's happening via a server. And I think this is really the next major incremental advance that'll change this technology from something that you're having a power and process while you're carrying around to something that's being processed elsewhere. And this applies to everything from the text-to-speech conversion to the GPS processing. This should all be done elsewhere rather than on board, because that's obviously using a lot of resources to do that. There are devices, there's one in Japan I would point to specifically, that are already doing this. There's an Epson Seiko device, which sells for around $800, that gives you navigation at about 1 meter accuracy, and it gets its data via the wireless connection, so you don't have to have that data on board. And of course, their wireless infrastructure is newer and faster than what we have here in the U.S. Right now, that's really one of the major limitations to making this technology smaller, is the wireless data connections that are available or not available, as it may be.
What impact do you think this tool, when it's finally released in its lovely compact form, is going to have on existing mobility aids and the way that we travel?
Well, there's a pretty strong distinction that we try to draw between mobility and orientation. And the GPS talk products are designed specifically for orientation. Nothing to do with mobility. The dog and the cane are quite effective devices for mobility, and we don't see our particular products being helpful particularly in detecting obstacles. Now, what would be nice is if some of the devices for detecting obstacles, some of the other electronic devices that have been developed, if those can get integrated with GPS talk, then that's good for the user. It's good for the customer. Rather than having to carry around a talking sign and a GPS talk and a VOIC and all the rest of the devices, the electronic travel it, they're all wrapped into one box.
Have you been exploring that with people like the Talking Signs folks?
Absolutely. Any opportunity, I discuss these facts with some of the other developers, and we've been to conferences together, and we discuss it, but it's conceptual at this point. It takes a lot of resources to actually move ahead and do some development on the integration of these products when there aren't real obvious links. One thing that distinguishes our development from other products in this arena is the fact that we don't have to build an infrastructure. And this is really good news, I think, for the consumer. We're relying on commercial products that major companies are developing, like Cybernaut, like Magellan and Garmin and many other commercial companies. And so we really have to just work on the software and the user interface. Some of these other products, like the Talking Sign and the Signal Streetlight technology, they have quite a challenge on their hands trying to build in an infrastructure that supports these other devices. When it gets to the point that those infrastructures are more widespread, I think the technology may be to a point where integrating these devices into one box also becomes more feasible.
This is something that a lot of people are going to want when it's eventually miniaturized. I wonder whether there will be the same sort of support from the public so that fundraising may occur to give many blind people these devices in the same way that fundraising occurs for guide dogs, for instance. There are very few people who actually pay. I don't know of anyone who pays the exorbitant costs of getting a guide dog trained, etc. What do you think is the future in terms of getting this technology in the hands of people who maybe can't afford it?
That's a good question. I do not want to rely on public funding to make the GPS talk available to people. That's why we've priced it pretty aggressively relative to adaptive technology products. This $799 product, which includes hardware and software, is on the low side. And it's important that users can get this without public assistance. It may be some time that there is some public funding that goes towards these sorts of things, but traditionally, mobility devices in general, the dog aside, have not been funded either by departments of rehabilitation or by public agencies. They tend to be a distant second cousin to some of the other adaptive technology for reading and so forth that can be justified for vocational needs. Mobility, good mobility and orientation is paramount to a lot of things. Socially and professionally, that I don't understand this viewpoint, but it happens to be a fact of life that electronic travel aids are not typically funded. So I don't see that mentality of not funding these products is likely to change in the near future.
Will this device have the same kind of, I'm just trying to think of the word I'm looking for, I'm not sure whether sympathy is quite an appropriate term, but will it kind of appeal to people, to the donating members of the public, in the same way that a guide dog does? Might there be a lot of money raised that way?
Well, it's hard to compete with the guide dog appeal. That is such an attractive thing to a person that dies and doesn't have anybody to give their money to. What better than a blind person using a dog? I'm trying to think who it was that said he never wanted to be in a movie that had kids or puppies because he would be upstaged by them. I think that's a tough thing to compete with, the guide dog appeal. GPS has a certain amount of sexiness to it that tends to get a lot of media attention and public attention. So there is some value to be gained from the GPS aspect of this technology.
Now, you have made a demo available, and there's quite a lot of interesting reading material on your website. Can you give us details as to where people can go to find out more?
can look at our website for referrals to local dealers and to the master distributor for the U.S. I'll give you their contact information. If you don't have access to the website, then you might want a phone number. You can find your local dealer in the United States from Beyond site in Denver, Colorado. Phone number is 303-795-6455. The website information is www.senderogroup.com. Sendero is S as in Sierra, E-N-D-E-R-O, Sendero Group, all one word, .com. And that will provide links to Beyond Sight and to local dealers. In terms of other countries, we would hope later this year that we'll have England and the rest of Europe will follow in. And Canada may not be too far in the distance either. In terms of contact information for those locations, you can send us an email, info@senderogroup.com, let's say in 2 or 3 months, and we should be able to give you updated information on contact info there.
That's Michael May, President and CEO of Sendero Group.